Radio.
The Art of Being Human. A talk by Bishop Peter Comensoli at Theology on Tap, held at La Pub in Sydney CBD. This talk was provided by xt3.com.
Thanks, Pat. I can see where my glass of wine is, and I've put some water next to it as well, just for a bit of variety. Hello, everyone. How far do we go back? Down there? Yeah, how far down that end? Waves up, yeah, fair way down. If I get bored with myself, I can see that I can watch a bit of TV as well. So, the last time, I think, I was in this kind of setting, Midnight Oil was playing down in Wollongong at the North Gong pub. Really good place. I'm showing my age. Most of you probably don't even know who Midnight Oil is. Shame, shame. Peter Garrett, yeah, ex-politician. Hello, everyone. A special hello to Broken Bay Diocese people. Where are yous? Hey, good on yous all. Everyone else, say hello to the Broken Bay Diocese people. Go on, say hello to them. Wave! it's lovely that we can all gather together for wherever we are. We'll be people from the Archdiocese. There'll be people from Parramatta. Where's Parramatta represented? Hoo-hoo. Okay, the Archdiocese. Oh, not many of you. Got most from Broken Bay. Isn't that great? Any Wollongong people? Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of Wollongongs. Gong. Good to see the gong here too. Lovely to have you all here. So, you might have noticed my topic is to be or not to be, the art of being human. And in a sense, I'm not going to answer the question to be or not to be, but the question how to be. The question of how to be. How are we the human beings that we are? And that's the sort of thing that I'm going to be talking to you about for about 15, 20 minutes, and then we get over to questions on the topic or on other things, whatever you like. David Attenborough is, in, as you know, has those wonderful science and nature programs on TV that have been showing for ages. Always loved his stuff. There's extraordinary images that he can show of the natural world and what have you. David Attenborough asked once this question: why do human beings sing? Why do human beings sing? And he gave an answer. And in typical Attenborough style, he was able to give us a good understanding of the science behind it all. So he had this to say. I'm just got a very quick quote. It's tempting to think that human beings, very early in their history, used music to create a family. You know, wooing someone. You sing away. And to keep the family together, keeping your children nice and happy through your singing and what have you. And there can be little question that a male with a good singing voice in our own society today is still a source of sexual attraction and excitement. So fellas, who can sing well? Here's your chance. And quality counts, David Attenborough said. So there you go, fellas. Females have been selecting males with a versatile larynx since way back in our ancestry. So there we go. In a sense, David Attenborough gives us the science of why human beings sing. But science cannot answer a particular question I have, which is this: why do I like to sing in the shower? By myself, may I stress. Why do you do that? Who does that sort of thing? You know, wandering around on the street or something, just singing a tune to yourself? Just those sort of opportunities. Science can't explain that because that's got nothing to do with wooing someone or keeping the family together. I'm certainly not doing those sort of things when I'm singing to myself in the shower. So science cannot explain why it is that human beings do the things that they do. Science can explain a lot about what human beings do. They can give those sort of causal connections, as David Attenborough was doing, you know. The using of your larynx helps you to woo the girls or the boys, depending on what sex you are. and so on. But it doesn't much help us with the question why and the question how. And there's a difference there in understanding our humanity. A human being, if you just say a human being, pick a human being, a generic human being, they're going to be one of either male or female sex, they're going to have certain ethnic features, they'll have a certain height and colour and size and so on and so forth, two legs, two arms, a beating heart and brain in the head and all those sort of things. Human being, generic human being. But when we just think of that as a human being, it just always is a question to us because we're going, well, what is a human being? What happens if you lose your arm, for instance? You cease being a human being. What happens if you can't think? Do you cease being a human being? So the question of just our nature in that sort of very scientific sense keeps posing questions which we find very difficult in the end to answer. Human being. But what happens if you reverse those two words and start talking about being human? What is it for us to be human? And that, in a sense, is an answer in itself. The being is we're doing this already, which poses various questions for us. So rather than human being, a question mark, where the answers can be really complex, being human, in a sense, is the answer that poses questions for how we then might live our lives. So that difference, the reverse from human being to being human, is what I want to talk a little bit about today. So that difference in itself is a difference between, in a sense, what a human being is, you know, the whatness, you know, back to those descriptions I was giving, you might have a brain, you got capacity to make decisions, you have self-awareness, the whatness of our nature. But there is also a sense of the thisness, this human being, you. And you, Annie. And each one of us as individual human beings. This person, as distinct from human mass. There is a big difference between the what questions and the this questions. So here is Common Soli. This is Common Soli, an individual example of a man. It goes to the fact of what I am as a human being. So the factuality of me. But it just talks about me in sort of a generic way. But also there is this, Common Soli, the man. Me in my own life, being human, being a subject, not just an object. None of us here are just objects, as a cow is just an object, or a snake is just an object. We are subjects. I matter. Me. We talk about me, talk about yourselves. Notice the language even, the use of personal pronouns. We are not its, we are he's or she's, I or you, we and they. That is the big difference between a human being and being human. So in this sense, a human being who is a person, and we're all persons, by the way, I'll get to that in a minute. So as persons, we occupy always a particular relationship in our world. So here I stand, and you're all dealing with me as a subject. You're looking at me and say, yes, a human being, and you can do all that, but you're looking at me as Peter, as a man. And we have a personal relationship that way. So every person has an unavoidable presence in the world. Even the most forgotten person. You might be able to ignore someone who is a person, but you cannot deny someone as a person. You can ignore someone who is a person, but you cannot deny them as persons. And so every human being, every person, has a moral dimension to their lives. It's the difference between being something and being someone. Persons are always someone and not just something in the world. So my humanity is important. Not because I'm important as me, but the very life that I live is important for our world, because I'm a presence in the world, and each one of you are a presence in our world. You are a subject in our world, not just an object. You are someone in the world, not just something. And all of us then are in a relationship with one another. And that's part of the difference between just human being and being human. We become recognisably subjects. We recognise one another for the persons that we are. Science, if we go back to the image of, say, the singing side of things that David Attenborough was describing, what he did was, in a sense, looked at the phenomenon of singing, and in a scientific way he was able to pull it apart and identify certain features of it. That's a terrific way of understanding things. Science, our scientific way of understanding the world, helps us to pull things apart to see how they work. So in his pulling things apart, he was able to see that, you know, the singing has a very ancient tradition, or ancient evolutionary dimension to it. Goes back to very early and primitive forms of animal life and so on, where singing used birds. Think of birds. They're singing of birds as a form of communication. So he was able to, in science, pull things apart to see how they work. In our faith, in our Christian faith, and in all faiths, in all religions, religion brings things together to see what they mean. Science pulls things apart to see how they work. Faith brings things together to see what they mean. And that difference will help us understand our role in our world, that it gives meaning to our lives. We're not just a hunk of flesh and blood with the capacity to think and reason and so on. We're not just that. Lots of other things in the world are that. Interestingly enough, snails can think, very primitively thinking, but they can think. They have a brain. There is those synaptic accesses that are always working in a snail. But we don't see snails as subjects. We see snails as things, not as someone, but as something. So what does it make a difference that we see ourselves as someone? What might that difference be? Well, there are some people, some philosophers particularly, and there a particular philosopher who's coming to our, who's actually in our country right now, Peter Singer. You might be aware that Archbishop Anthony Fisher is going to be debating Peter Singer in a week or two time, I think. When's that happening? A couple of months' time, anyway. Peter Singer has a way of describing us as persons that is a bit like our nature plus. Our nature plus. So we're human being plus certain things which get us over the line to be a person, to be a subject, to be someone. And so it goes a bit like this. Human nature, yes, you've got genes, human genes, and you've got the biology of a human being and so on and so forth. But Can you reason? Can you think? The first plus. Can you make decisions of your own? Can you exercise your will? The second plus. Do you have a sense of yourself? The third plus, self-awareness. So reason, willing, self-awareness. Our rationality, our volition, our consciousness. So Peter Singer would say, well, human being plus those three things gets you to a person. And when you're a person, then you have all the moral rights of a person. The full gamut of moral rights and responsibilities. But what happens if you're missing one of those three things? Your reasoning, your willing, your self-awareness. What happens, for instance, if you have suffered some sort of catastrophic accident and you lose your capacity to be able to reason and communicate? And in the most extreme forms, are no longer aware of yourself. Well, Peter Singer would say, no longer a person. No longer a person. Therefore, no longer has the same moral rights and responsibilities that other persons have. So that way of thinking, which starts with, in a sense, a mass, you know, hunk of human being, and then adds these other things and says, okay, now we'll give you the sense of being a person. That way of thinking is actually very prevalent in our society now. Think of the way, for instance, we treat unborn children. A few cells, a few human cells, we say, in our society fairly widely. Can't reason, has no sentience, not going to feel pain. Therefore, I'm not a person. Therefore, we can treat this unborn child differently from a born child. A moral difference. So this way of thinking is quite prevalent. We can do it at the other end of life too. Someone who's very severely demented, who's got Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia, and is no longer capable of being present in the way that they once were present. Okay, we might think about euthanizing them. So these are the sort of the consequences of this thinking of ourselves just in a scientific way, just as a hunk of human being plus these things that might get us towards personhood. That's the way of something plus. But I'm saying to you that we're never just something. We're always someone. So how do we look about it in a different way? Well, our faith gives us a good sense of that, our Christian faith. I want to just read to you a little bit of Psalm 8. Psalm 8. If you go to your Bible later on, you can look up Psalm 8. And it says this, O Lord our God, how majestic is your name through all the earth. Your majesty is set above the heavens. So a really great sort of image of God, big and the all-powerful Lord. And then he goes on, when I see the heavens, this is the person who wrote the psalm saying this, the psalmist, when I see the heavens and the work of your hands, the moon and the stars which you arranged, what is man that you would keep him in mind, the son of man that you would care for him? So all think of the vast universe in which we live. And the little dot that the earth is in this vast universe. And who knows what else is out there in that extraordinary universe, in the stars and in the wonder of that created reality. What sort of speck are we in all of that? And that's a bit of like the psalmist is saying, what is a human being that the Lord would keep us in mind, this little speck in amongst the vastness, the near infinity of the universe? But the psalmist then goes on and says this, yet, Lord, you have made us little lower than the angels. With glory and honour you have crowned us, giving us power over the works of your hands. You put all things under our feet. So there we have a sense of our humanity is coming out of this gift of God's own creation, that we are made, as the Bible tells us, in God's image and likeness. We are made in God's image and likeness. And so this little speck in the vastness of the universe, which science might recognize as a little speck, God sees us, sees me, and I matter. You matter. You matter. You too.
And you.
Munching away. And even the one with the beanie on, having a chat to someone else. We all matter to God because he's made us in his image and likeness. As the book of Genesis put it, in the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And the Catechism puts this in this sort of way. Being in the image of God, the human individual possesses the dignity of a person. Just by the fact that we are made in God's image and likeness, we have the dignity of being a person who is not just something, but someone. I'll repeat that. Being in the image of God, the human individual possesses the dignity of a person who is not just something, but someone. Those of you who like your catechism, 357. You can look it up later on. What I want to draw your attention to here, and this is my second last point, is this. God has created us. We are creatures. We're not just a hunk of something which is of human nature that might eventually become a person. We are God's creatures. So we are begotten. You know that image of in the creed we say about God himself, the Son, begotten, not made, one in being with the Father. You know, the phrase of the second person of the Trinity, begotten, come of, come out of. We come out of God. We are begotten as God's creatures. We don't make ourselves. A hint here in terms of the gender theory debates that are going on at the moment. We don't make ourselves. We are begotten. We have been endowed with God's plan and purpose. We have been endowed with the way of God into our very being. Being human is being in the image of God. Being human is being in the image of God. It's being the image of God. We don't make ourselves. So our lives are always a lived reality. Our living out of our lives. The living of the life right now. In all its ups and downs. In all its struggles and joys. In all its sorrows and happinesses. That sense in which being begotten, we don't make ourselves. We have been endowed, blessed, given the gift of our humanity. And in being given that gift and having purpose to that gift because we're made in God's image, then we have something to then get on with living out. Being human, not human being. Well, we're both, but you know what I'm getting at there, I hope. God has endowed us with our humanity so that we can get on with living it out. In all its weaknesses and difficulties and struggles, but also in all its beauty and loveliness and joys and happinesses and so on. We are made in God's image. That's the great gift that we learn from our Christian faith. And it gives us an understanding of what it means to be human, to live out our humanity. What does that tell me as a final point? Well, it tells me that I've got a project in my own life, that my life is not just something that's there to be kind of go from next point to next point to next point in some sort of chronological existence. My life has a purposed existence. My life and the living of it matters. It matters to you. My life. Yeah, me, Peter Commensoli. My life actually matters to you. You probably didn't think that, but it's true. Because we are persons. We are those who have been begotten by God in His image to live out the project of our lives. So my life and your life and our lives together make all the difference in the world. That's why, as Pope Francis said it too, and just about every other Pope, but Pope Francis has been saying it in particularly short phrases at the moment, we need to go out to the peripheries of our society. So where those people, for instance, who are most at risk of losing their humanity because of the circumstances of their lives, because of the way they've been treated by others, because, where someone's humanity is most at risk, that's where we need to be. Because that's where we live out our humanity too, in purpose, with the project of our own lives. So in the end, being human is a sign of hope. Just simply being human is a sign of hope. It's not an achievement. It's not as if we're going to get that brain thinking and that will happening and the self-awareness going before we can start thinking about ourselves as being in the zone. Just by our living, we're in the zone. Just by our existing, we're in the zone of our humanity. And when we're in that zone, then we need to be with one another. Hope is the sign of humanity. And so when we lose hope, that's when we start to lose sight of our humanity. Hope puts us in the orientation where we need to go. That sort of sense, you know how you have that sense of in your own life, and I have it in mine, of I'm already here, but I'm not yet there where I need to be. That already, but not yet feeling. You know that sort of feeling? You know, the sense of, yes, I know my life and my purpose and so on, but I'm not yet there. That's hope. The not yet is the hope, the directioning of our lives. So when we lose our hope, we start losing the directioning of our lives and our horizons are shrunk. Open up our horizons. That's what our Christian faith teaches us, to open up our human horizons, because our horizon, all of us, non-believers and believers, Christians and non-Christians, all human beings, our horizon opens up onto God. So let's not shrink our horizons. Let's not shrink our humanity, but remain open to the very widest possibilities. We are persons by virtue of the gift that God has given to us, the gift of our own lives. And now it is for us to live out the project of our lives, looking out onto the horizon of God.
That was Bishop Peter Commensoli with The Art of Being Human, The Theology on Tap. Theology on Tap is held at Le Pub in Sydney CBD. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.